Welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm chatting today with Professor Billy Benevsky, who is a research fellow and behavioural scientist at the University of Newcastle. Welcome to the podcast, Professor Benevsky, and thank you for your time.
Oh, hello, Kate. Thank you.
You've co-authored an article for the MJA, which is intriguingly titled No Smoker Left Behind. Tell me, what is the prevalence of smoking in Australia now?
The prevalence of smoking in Australia is decreased a lot in the last 20 or 30 years. So at the moment, it's sitting around 13, perhaps 14% of adults in Australia are smoking. And so that's, you know, virtually halved since the 1990s.
Terrific. We're obviously doing a lot of things right.
We are. Look, we've been one of the leading lights of tobacco control in the world. Mm-hmm. Australia's been implementing these incredibly effective tobacco control strategies. So you might have heard of, you know, most recently the plain packs legislation.
Yep.
Just changed the way that cigarette packets look. And overseas, there's countries, you know, sort of taking on this legislation, so it's become a worldwide phenomenon, and Australia's been the leader in that.
So if we're doing so well, why are we worried about leaving smokers behind?
Despite all this wonderful success, what we've found recently is that there is this gap that's been developing in smoking rates, with smoking rates decreasing steadily amongst sort of more educated, higher income population groups, but not decreasing at all amongst sort of less educated and lower socioeconomic groups. So there's certain population groups, mm-hmm, that are finding it really difficult to reduce their smoking prevalence rates.
Which groups are we talking about specifically?
We're talking about those groups that we often refer to as disadvantaged or vulnerable subgroups in the population. So people with a mental illness or other addictions have very high smoking rates.
Mm-hmm.
Indigenous Australians, homeless people, unemployed people, and just generally those geographical areas in Australia that are classified by the Australian Bureau of Statistics as of lower socioeconomic status. There are some common factors, like sort of social and environmental factors, where a lot of people in those communities smoke.
Yep.
And it, you know, it's almost sort of still socially acceptable in those communities to smoke, which makes quitting very, very difficult. And then there's the socioeconomic implication of people who sort of have lower incomes end up smoking from a younger age, and by the time they reach adulthood, they're more heavily nicotine dependent, and so then it becomes much harder to quit. And
yeah,
this is a vicious circle, you know, in terms of socioeconomic status contributing to high smoking rates, and then high smoking rates contributing to poor health, and then poor health keeping you in that low socioeconomic group, and so on.
You mentioned in your article that, for example, mentally ill people were actively promoting, you know, it was actually promoted to them that smoking was a good thing or something that they could do. Yeah.
That's right. So historically, the tobacco industry used to target healthcare services like drug and alcohol services and mental health facilities, as well as social services like homelessness shelters and supported accommodation services.
Wow.
And they used to provide, you know, in homelessness shelters, they used to provide blankets, for example, with logos, with the tobacco branding on
dear
them. And in mental health facilities, they used to provide free packets of cigarettes. It was a very intentional, targeted marketing approach that that the tobacco industry took, not just here in Australia, but there's evidence of it happening in other countries as well. In the United States, they used to target the neighbourhoods with high African American mm-hmm. prevalence, you know. And so this culture developed, unfortunately, going way back, where in a lot of these facilities, it was perfectly acceptable to allow clients and residents and patients to smoke and to even encourage the smoking. So in some mental health services, the counsellors would smoke along with their patient in order to build a rapport and you know, a trusting relationship. Let's go over there and have a smoke and talk about your issues and we'll be pals, you know. So it's been really hard to break that culture within some of these institutions.
Now, there's a target that we're trying to hit of getting the prevalence down to 10% in by 2020. If we continue as we are, with no further interventions or public health campaigns, have we got any chance of hitting that target?
Yes, do amongst those population groups that have got, you know, that higher socioeconomic status,
right.
We've already hit that target.
Okay.
And we're well below it. Amongst those population groups, smoking rates are under 10% now.
Okay.
But we've got data from Australia and the UK have got similar data and America's got similar data that shows that amongst these priority populations with the high smoking prevalence, that smoking rates have not decreased in over 20, 30 years. So in Australia, for example, people with severe mental illness, it was about 65%, you know, 1997. And it continues to be 65% in 2017. We need to do something about that because these are our most vulnerable mm-hmm. members of society and they are disproportionately affected by tobacco-related disease now. So we're finding these terrible disparities in heart disease, in cancers, in chronic respiratory disease, all the biggies in Australia are affecting these particular groups the most. It's costing billions of dollars for the health system, but it's costing the individual a lot of money as well, and they don't have much money to spare. So with the price of cigarettes always increasing, the financial stress that these guys are experiencing continues to increase as well because, you know, they're having trouble quitting, so they keep smoking, so that means that other areas of their lives suffer.
So what's the answer?
That's a great question. I wish I had the answer. And we're trying to address some of those factors that we're finding are barriers to quitting smoking. So, for example, we've been doing a lot of research and we're a lot of program delivery as well with mental health services, drug and alcohol services, homelessness services to try to change that culture of smoking being quite permissive to turn it around, in fact. So not only to stop smoking being permissive in those environments, but for them to take on an anti-smoking approach and to deliver support to their clients for quitting. So to, you know, refer them to the telephone quit line, to just suggest to them to quit, to provide them with some pamphlets or some booklets that they might be able to use, to give them some free nicotine replacement therapy because they can't afford to buy it themselves. So that's one area that we're really working hard on is to change those service providers' culture and service delivery so that, you know, smoking is addressed as another problem that they can help their clients with.
Mm-hmm. Do different subgroups react in different ways to different strategies?
We're not really finding that at the moment.
Okay.
So we're finding that they're all really keen to quit. Like, they all really want to quit, and they're hungry for some help.
Right.
And anything that we give them, they take.
Yeah.
You know, they're just so keen to do it. They recognise it's a problem, and they have tried quitting in the past, and often they've tried quitting in the past with very little support. So, you know, hopefully now if we increase the help and support that they're getting, their quit attempts will be much more successful. But whether we are working with drug and alcohol clinics, whether we're working with Aboriginal medical services, or whether we are working with mental health services, the reaction that we get from the smokers is pretty much the same. They really appreciate this help, and they want to try whatever they can.
So that sounds like the whole public education campaigns of the past have done their job. We all know how bad smoking is for us.
Yes, that's right. And there is a lot of research that shows that a lot of those mass media campaigns and the health warnings on the cigarette packets, mm-hmm. and so on, that they did speak to these smokers as well. You know, they did understand the message. It's just that beyond that, they didn't get any more help. So
right.
So we're trying to now provide them with those evidence-based treatments and therapies, because there's a lot out there. You know, there's people that will claim that hypnosis or, you know, or various types of things will help them quit smoking, and they're just not evidence-based approaches. And then there's those approaches that we have a world of data on that show that they work.
Yes.
And that's what we've got to get to these smokers now.
So where does vaping sit in that?
We're still grappling with this issue of vaporised nicotine and vaping and what do we do about it. And the reason that we're still so uncertain is because there's so little evidence. But the evidence that does exist, because vaping is you know, freely available, mm-hmm. in many parts of Europe and the UK and the US, there is some data coming out of those countries that suggests that it is probably helping people quit smoking. You know, the US and the UK, their decline in smoking rates is now surpassing Australia's. And so, you know, there's some data to suggest that the vaping may be part of that.
Yeah.
And there's also been some studies done on the safety of vaporized nicotine and vaping. And although, you know, there's almost nothing that is 100% safe other than quitting smoking completely.
Yes.
But what the safety data around vaping is suggesting is that it is much, 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 much safer than continued smoking.
Yeah. What about the possibility that it might be a gateway for young people into actual cigarettes?
Yeah. So there's not really any good evidence to suggest that might happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of surveys from the US that were, you know, the first ones to raise that this might be a problem that we need to watch. That,
yep.
You know, if we make it freely available everywhere, that kids will take up vaping and then that will lead to tobacco smoking. But there's not really any good evidence to show that that's happening. It's certainly not happening in the UK. And, you know, there's not any... vaping nicotine is not easily available in Australia, so there's no evidence in Australia that anything like that is happening either. Another concern with the vaping nicotine is that in those countries where it is freely available, the tobacco industry is starting to enter that market. You know, for obvious reasons, there is deep mistrust of the tobacco industry and the lengths that they will go to get people back onto tobacco. And what we're doing is we're trying to collect as much data, do as much research in this area as well, so that we can form policy that is evidence-based and data-based policy, so that we'll know, you know, whether it's worthwhile legislating to make vaping nicotine a lot more available for those smokers who have tried everything else and just can't quit the tobacco cigarettes, then it's much safer for them to use vaporised nicotine.
A big proportion of our listeners are GPs. What role do you see GPs having in getting help to these subgroups that need some help?
Such an important role, you know, such an important role, because it is most likely a big proportion of their patient population, because a lot of these smokers have now got these chronic diseases that they're living with and are going in and seeing their GPs on a regular basis. So these are multiple repeated opportunities to just, you know, offer that very brief advice of, you know, it would really help your diabetes or your heart condition if you gave up smoking. They could prescribe some nicotine replacement therapy, which would make the NRT a lot cheaper for these smokers. And they could also, if they're not comfortable providing the stop smoking counselling themselves, they can refer their patients who smoke to other services like the telephone quit line or stop smoking clinics.
Right. If you had a magic wand and you could wave it and get what these priority groups need, what would you ask for first?
All forms of nicotine replacement therapy on the PBS, making it a lot cheaper for them to get nicotine replacement because they're heavily, heavily nicotine dependent, and they need not only patches, but they need to use combination of patches and an oral form of nicotine, sort of fast-acting and slow release at the same time. That becomes really expensive, and they don't have the disposable income for that type of therapy. Thanks so much, Kate.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.